The Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor is brought to you by BetterHelp.com. Making professional therapy accessible, affordable, and convenient so anyone who struggles with life's challenges can get help anytime, anywhere. BetterHelp offers access to licensed, trained, experienced, and accredited psychologists, marriage and family therapists, clinical social workers, and board-licensed professional counselors. In today's 21st century way of living our lives, everything is online. The pandemic pushed that forward even more when many things were done through video conferencing. Now, BetterHelp is absolutely exploding onto the scene, and because it is helping so many different people. BetterHelp is the largest therapy platform worldwide. They change the way people get help with facing life's challenges by providing convenient, discreet, and affordable access to a licensed therapist. BetterHelp makes professional therapy available anytime, anywhere, through a computer, tablet, or smartphone. After you sign up, you will be matched to an available therapist who fits your objectives, preferences, and the type of issues you're dealing with. Different therapists have different approaches and areas of focus, so it's important to find the right person who can achieve the best results for you. At BetterHelp, they have found that we are able to provide a successful match most of the time. However, if you start the process and you feel your therapist isn't a good fit for you, you can elect to be matched to a different therapist. How easy is that to do in the traditional sense? It's not easy at all, which is a big hindrance in getting the therapy that most of us, if not all of us, need. This is the answer. BetterHelp.com. Go to BetterHelp.com today.
Thank you for joining me this morning. It's been a devastating week for all of us as we continue to mourn the loss of the four children who were shot and killed in the week, this week in Oxford High School. We've heard some positive news that some of those injured in Tuesday's shooting have made some progress recovering from their physical injuries. While the physical wounds of the victims are starting to heal, the emotional wounds to the victims, students, and the entire community will last for years. I continue to work with Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard and his team to stay close to the facts and evidence of this case as it continues to evolve. My role as the Oakland County prosecutor is to seek justice for the victims of this tragedy. The family, friends, and loved ones of Hannah St. Juliana, Madison Baldwin, Tate Murr, and Justin Schilling, and the other victims have had their lives shattered. As I mentioned a few days ago, I did have the opportunity to speak with the parents of the children who were killed. Additionally, my office has reached out this morning to all of the victims who were injured. And we continue to be dedicated to offering them services and support during this time. While the shooter was the one who entered the high school and pulled the trigger, there are other individuals who contributed to this, to the events on November 30th, and it's my intention to hold them accountable as well. It's imperative we prevent this from happening again. No other parent or community should have to live through this nightmare. I have shared previously, and I will reiterate today, that gun ownership is a right, and with that right comes great responsibility. Based on the information and evidence I have received, today I am announcing charges against the shooter's parents, Jennifer and James Crumbly. The charges are as follows. James Crumbly is charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Jennifer Crumbly is also charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. I will now publish the details that led to that decision and have already previously been made public, which allows me to comment on them in a swear to that has just taken place in the district court by Officer Tim Willis, Detective Tim Willis. The investigation into the school shooting incident at Oxford High School, which occurred on November 30th, 2021, has revealed that James Crumbly purchased a Sig Sauer 9mm model SP-2022 from Acme Shooting Goods in Oxford, Michigan on November 26, 2021. A store employee confirms that Ethan Crumbly was present with James at the time of the purchase. Per statute, James Crumbly completed ATF Form 5309A. On or about November 26, 21, Ethan Crumbly's social media posts reveal photos of the semi-automatic handgun, along with the caption, "Just got my new beauty today," including an emoji with hearts, "Sig Sauer 9mm. Any questions I will answer," end quote. Subsequent to the purchase of that weapon, one of Jennifer Crumbly's social media posts on about 11/27/21 read, quote, "Mom and Sunday testing out his new Christmas present," end quote. On November 21st, 21, a teacher at the Oxford High School observed Ethan Crumbly searching ammunition on his cell phone during class and reported the same to school officials. Jennifer Crumbly was contacted via voicemail by school personnel regarding that son's inappropriate internet search. School personnel indicate they followed that voicemail up with an email but received no response from either parent. Thereafter, Jennifer Crumbly exchanged text messages about the incident with her son on that day, stating, quote, "LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught," end quote. On November 30th, 21, the morning of the shooting, the next day, Ethan Crumbly's teacher came upon a note on Ethan's desk, which alarmed her to the point that she took a picture of it on her cell phone. The note contained the following: a drawing of a semi-automatic handgun pointing at the words, quote, "The thoughts won't stop, help me," end quote. In another section of the note was a drawing of a bullet with the following words above that bullet, quote, "Blood everywhere," end quote. Between the drawing of the gun and the bullet is a drawing of a person who appears to have been shot twice and bleeding. Below that figure is a drawing of a laughing emoji. Further down the drawing are the words, quote, "My life is useless," end quote. And to the right of that are the words, quote, "The world is dead," end quote. As a result, James and Jennifer Crumbly were immediately summoned to the school. A school counselor came to the classroom and removed the shooter and brought him to the office with his backpack. Counselor obtained the drawing, but the shooter had already altered it. The drawings of the gun and the bloody figure were scratched out along with the words, "Help me," and "My life is useless," "The world is dead," and "Blood everywhere." Those were all altered by him. At the meeting, James and Jennifer Crumbly were shown the drawing and were advised that they were required to get their son into counseling within 48 hours. Both James and Jennifer Crumbly failed to ask their son if he had his gun with him or where his gun was located, and failed to inspect his backpack for the presence of the gun, which he had with him. James and Jennifer Crumbly resisted the idea of them leaving the school at that time, of their son leaving the school at that time. Instead, James and Jennifer Crumbly left the high school without their son. He was returned to the classroom. When the news of the active shooter at Oxford High School had been made public, Jennifer Crumbly texted to her son at 1:22 p.m., quote, "Ethan, don't do it," end quote. At 1:37 p.m., James Crumbly called 911, reporting that a gun was missing from his house, and he believed his son may be the shooter. Further investigation revealed that the Sig Sauer 9mm handgun purchased by James Crumbly was stored unlocked in a drawer in James and Jennifer's bedroom. The gun recovered from the shooter at the school after the shooting was the same gun that was purchased by his father, James Crumbly, on November 26, 2021, in the presence of his son. Based upon the foregoing, the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office requested and received authorized, we charged 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter as to James Crumbly and 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter as to Jennifer Crumbly.
You know, some people think that I tell my story
to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. Mm-hmm. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence, and they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Mm. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may have actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
Everybody, welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. This is me, I'm your host, Chris Taylor. I just listened to that press conference, and I gotta be honest, I was surprised. I was very surprised, because this situation is basically unprecedented. And I don't know, I'm not saying that this is the first time in history that the parents of a school shooter were also charged. I don't know that to be the case, but I don't remember any cases of that happening. And there's always speculation of, well, why aren't the parents held accountable in these certain situations? And it seems like they never are. And you kind of, I'm torn in that, because, you know, I listening to this stuff, I can put myself in those parents' shoes and think, you know, what would I have done? What would I do? And, you know, this school shooting happened a few days ago, and it started to, you know, hit the news, and it's, you know, going to be a big narrative for the news. CNN and Fox and MSNBC. And, you know, I don't really know why that is, because before the pandemic happened, there were school shootings, you know, mass shootings, active shooting situations where three or four or five people would die. And it seemed like, you know, unless the body count was in the 20s and 30s, like the Las Vegas massacre, you know, it just didn't rate any longer for the 24-hour news networks to even really cover. And when the pandemic hit, of course, that's all it became. The news cycle was the pandemic, of course, the election and everything else. There really wasn't any school shootings during that time. And I wondered, man, I haven't heard of the news of any mass shootings really since the pandemic. And I'm sure there was some, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's almost as if now, you know, it's reset to where there hasn't been a school shooting in so long that even one of this magnitude is now, it rates again for the news. And but anyway, this level of information that this prosecutor has given, and I applaud her for that, because usually the prosecutors of any case will, you know, very smugly hold information like that private, and they won't share with the public. They love to be the holder of you know, precious information. And even though, you know, they could share details with the public, because after all, yes, I understand that when an investigation is underway, that certain aspects of the investigation and investigative techniques and you know, everything else that needs to be kept secret, I get that. But there is so much information that usually prosecutors will just not share with the public, with the press. You know, most people have a weird view of the media, right? It's like they think that, you know, anybody that's sharing information with the media must just be, you know, in love with themselves. They want to see themselves on camera. They want, and that's just not the case. The reason that we have the press in this country, the free press, is so that information can be shared with the citizens of this country. That is the whole point of it. And so, you know, it's, I've gotten negative remarks in my career, because it's like, oh, there's Chris again in front of the cameras. He's just, you know, but it's just so stupid. Like, that is why the media exists. So that you can give information that other people want and need. And anyway, that's not what this podcast is about, but I applaud the prosecutor for doing that. She went into great detail. This is an unprecedented situation in that the parents of the school shooter have been charged, and I might add, charged relatively quickly. It's only been a few days since the shooting. And this is, you know, I sometimes wonder why charges take so long sometimes. And I do know that just my last podcast, I just chided the prosecution for rushing to judgment and rushing charges against Kyle Rittenhouse and not doing a thorough investigation. And so now here I am saying that why do police and prosecutors take so long to bring charges? I understand that you know, you could see a little bit of a hypocritical stance there, but that's not the case. The difference is the phrase thorough investigation is complete. Now, when there is a situation such as this, where the circumstances are so clear, where the leads the investigators are running down are followed and the story is understood quickly, that doesn't mean that it's a rushed investigation. That just means that they are proficient with what they're doing, and they need to hold people accountable right away. And so I believe that this investigation was very thorough, and it's ongoing. She kind of alluded to the fact that maybe the school district, the administration of the school, may be criminally culpable or liable for charges, and that would be really, really surprising to me. So let's kind of jump in a little bit on this. The reason that I shared a few minutes of that press conference is so that I could kind of break down a little bit about, you know, what happened and why I tend to agree with the charges against the parents, but at the same time, I sympathize with them so much. because, and yes, they were reckless, and yes, they did things that you know, now in hindsight, right? We always have the benefit of hindsight. Parents and people in these situations don't have that benefit. Nobody wants to believe that their child would be one to bring a gun to school and murder classmates, right? Even if a parent might see some issues in their child, maybe they recognize that there is some mental health issues going on. Maybe they understand that he's not part of this so-called popular crowd, that he struggles with making friends, that he's an outcast, that he might, you know, have some dark moods and tendencies. You know, anyone with half a brain would be able to recognize, you know, that in their child. But where I sympathize with them is that, you know, part of you would say, well, you know, yeah, but that's just part of growing up. That's normal. That's a normal part of the difficult circumstances that any high school student is in that part of our lives, that awkward stage of our lives. And parents want to give their child the benefit of the doubt. You know, here is a father who obviously loves guns and is a gun owner and you know, wants to share that hobby or that sport or that love with his child. Maybe the father had a difficult time you know, bonding with his son, and this was a way that he could help him, you know, be happy, and you know, I, that's where I sympathize with him, because, you know, I love guns, and I hope that my son, when he's of age, will love to shoot guns as well. And that is certainly an area where my father and I share similarities and bonded and learned the love of guns and hunting and everything else. But, you know, it was always taught gun safety. My father was a Green Beret, a Vietnam veteran. You know, you there's a responsible way to teach the love of guns to your children and to anybody. Gun safety is always the priority. And not locking your guns up in a safe that your children don't have access to is just an unforgivable mistake. I understand that, you know, a straw purchase is a crime, that, you know, when he goes to the gun store and he is buying this pistol, on the form for the background check, he has to put that he is buying the gun for himself. And, but yet, you know, he is giving it to his son as a gift, as a present, as a Christmas present. I think that is totally fine for people to do. Now, I understand that, you know, that is controversial, and certainly controversial after a situation like this. But, you know, how many guys would be guilty of that, you know, if something like that were to happen in your family, right? So I'm not saying that it's okay that he did that, but where I really believe that the charges were warranted is the day of the shooting. Obviously, this kid, I think his name was Ethan Crumbly, was seen as somebody who was a troubled child. He was probably bullied. He was an outcast. He was socially awkward, just like 99.9% of all school shooters are. We all know those people that we went to school with, high school with, that you, if you heard of a shooting at your school, you would certainly not be surprised to hear that so-and-so was the shooter. It's always the same after every school shooting, time after time, the classmates are interviewed and they say, I am not surprised one bit. There's red flags, that there's all these things that, you know, you after the shooting happens, you kind of connect the dots in your head and you're like, man, how easy would it have been to stop this if the authorities and the parents and the teachers would just do the right thing, right? And the problem with that is that we always have the benefit of hindsight when things like this happen. And that's not, that things are not always as clear before something like this happens. But I've got to say, in this specific circumstance, and this is why I believe that you know, they set precedence now with charging the parents with the strongest charges that they could possibly charge them with, because and I would not be surprised if the administrator, the principal or vice principal or whoever handled that meeting and allowed that Ethan Crumbly, that student, to go back to class after they had that meeting. It's got to be, the responsibility at that point has got to be on more than just the parents. This kid, the note that this teacher saw was so disturbing that she snapped a photo of it. And thankfully she did, because after he realized that somebody had saw the drawing, he erased it or drew through it or altered it or whatever. But she had the original there. It was, you know, basically a roadmap of what he was about to do. Major red flags. And she did the right thing. The teacher took a picture of it before he could destroy it. She notified her superiors, and then her superiors did the right thing by removing him from the classroom, taking him to the office, the administration office, and calling his parents. His parents were hard to get a hold of, and then when they finally went down there, they were shown the contents of the original drawing, and this is where, you know, you find it hard. I find it hard to be sympathetic at this stage of the story. If my child, if I already knew that they had issues, they had dark tendencies, they were an outcast, they had mental health issues, and then, you know, I probably would be apprehensive to give them access to firearms, right? Just to be safe. It would be very hard and it would be very hurtful to do that. But if I really felt like my child would be a threat to somebody, I definitely would be able to say, you know, I'm sorry, but we just, you know, we can't shoot guns together, or we can't be around guns, or whatever. I don't know how I would handle that, but I'd like to think that, you know, if I saw enough red flags, that I would not, you know, at the very least, I would not give unfettered access to firearms. If my son still wanted to shoot, we would go out to the desert and shoot, and then I would take the guns and lock them up where they would have no access to. You have to know that the parents knew that there were some red flags in their child. And then they are called down to the office for a disturbing incident, where not only did he, let me back up, because before that happened, the day before, this was on the day of the shooting. The morning of the shooting. The shooting was a little later in the afternoon. This incident of the drawing was in the morning of that day. The day before, the teacher saw Ethan shopping online, browsing for ammunition. And that too was reported immediately to her superiors. And that is when the superiors then emailed and called. You know, when my children's school calls, it's, you know, even if it's an automated response or automated message, that'll go to the voicemail, and then I'll get an email as well. So anyway, so when they called them, they left the voicemail, and then they also sent an email, you know, of the incident that Ethan was found, you know, browsing what is inappropriate for the school setting, to be in class browsing ammunition for his for a weapon, for a gun. And the mother didn't call the school back, but did, however, text her son and say, "Ethan, LOL, I'm not mad, but you have to learn how to not get caught." Now, that could seem very stupid, right? In hindsight, in hindsight, that could seem very stupid. But what I see is two parents that are struggling very hard, probably, to be a friend to their struggling teenager that he's unable to find within his peer group. When I see this father buying a firearm for his son, an early Christmas present even, and the mom, you know, trying to have a cool response to that situation, you know, that is where my sympathy comes back in, because I don't think that they're monsters, right? But this is where I think that they were struggling very hard to strike a balance between, you know, adding to his mental decline by coming down hard on him and grounding him or taking his things away because he did this stupid thing, because he was caught or whatever. You know, I see that as a mom struggling to you know, respond in a way that would not add to, because I'm sure that he's embarrassed, right? His teacher, the teacher probably said something out loud, like, "Ethan, you shouldn't be looking at that online," or whatever. And I'm sure he was laughed at, you know, there's all these contributing factors. And so as a mom, she's probably thinking, you know, how do I respond to this situation in a loving way? And you know, I feel sorry for her. But then the next day comes around and they are called to the office for what is a very disturbing graphic drawing. Now, they know that the day before he was caught searching for ammunition. They know that several days before they just bought him his own pistol and gave him unfettered access. They didn't have it in a safe and only brought it out to go safely to the range or to the woods or whatever. They gave him unfettered access. It was stored in his father's junk drawer, whatever it is, chest of drawers. And so where I have a hard time fathoming what happened next after this meeting with the school administrators and the parents and Ethan, you know, this is a clear message that he's saying, "Help me. The thoughts won't stop. Help me." Underneath a body that's bleeding with two bullet holes in them, the thoughts won't stop. Help me. The world is dead. Blood is everywhere. I mean, how much more clear of a cry for help can a child be giving than the thoughts won't stop? Help me. And when the administrators said, "I think Ethan should go home for the day. You need to have him in counseling within 48 hours. the parents then said no. They didn't want him to go home. This is when the administrator should have said, I'm sorry, he is suspended. He has to go home. And that is when the school resource officer, who should be the liaison to the police department or the sheriff's department, should be notified. And this is when a very cursory investigation, all they had to do is look at the mother's social media, Facebook, and see that not only is this kid showing signs of, an imminent threat, but now, you know, a click of a mouse to the mom's public profile could have found that not only does he have this motive and he's having this issues and it's a threat is imminent, but now he has the means. He has a pistol that was just purchased for him. This is when I believe enough probable cause exists for the Crumbly's Second Amendment rights to be at least temporarily infringed upon. And I hate to say that, because I am a true believer in the Second Amendment, a staunch defender. I don't support blanket red flag laws. I don't like the provisions in some of the red flag laws that exist where anybody can out of malice towards a personal slight could report their neighbor to the authorities, and the authorities could then have carte blanche to go and take the guns away without a charge or an adjudication before a court. No, I don't like that. But when this, in this circumstance, how can one argue against the fact that this kid and this family maybe even should not, at least during this apparent crisis, have the means to murder multiple people? We have that avenue already in the courts. An involuntary sending someone involuntarily to a mental health facility. The circumstances that were laid out before in this charging document had enough probable cause, in my opinion. And no, I don't think that limiting access to law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms will help one bit in stopping mass shootings. No, I don't believe that an assault weapons ban would limit mass shootings or mass killings. I don't support those things. But this issue, maybe more than any, is where nuance and context and complex discussions must be had by people that are educated on guns and weapons and mental health. This is where our elected leaders need to step up and have this nuanced debate and conversation. and not from a point, any side cannot come from a point of complete ignorance, which is what seems to happen anytime the Senate or the House debates gun control. Those on the left have absolutely no context or frame of reference for guns. And those on the right have absolutely no compassion and empathy for children even that are slaughtered at their schools. This is where the adults need to step up, the educated ones, and find a solution to situations just like this one in Oakland County, Michigan. I applaud the prosecutor for bringing charges against the parents. I think they're justified. That doesn't mean that I think the parents are monsters. I think that they were in a horrible situation and they needed professional help. And the school did mandate that within 48 hours. But why on earth would the school let this child, this struggling, hurting, crying out for help child go back to class? And why would the parents not ask him, son, do you have the pistol in your backpack? Because the second that the news broke that there was an active shooter, they knew. The mom texted during the shooting, Ethan, don't do it. The father ran home from his job to look for the pistol and called 911 and said, my pistol's missing, and I believe that my son is the active shooter. So you have to know that only hours earlier, they at least had an idea that the pistol might be in his backpack. Usually in a case like this or after a school shooting, you know, there's all kinds of finger pointing and it's like, you know, all these people should be held accountable. How dare you do this? How, you know, shame on you. But I've never seen one this clear cut where the dots were already connected for them, where the red flags were that immediate, or the attack was that quickly commenced after this situation where it would be very easy to avert this massacre by just sending the kid home, alerting the authorities, committing him to a mental health facility, and give him the help that he was crying out for. The parents failed. The school administration failed. And our elected leaders continue to fail on this issue. This issue is different than the immigration issue. This is different than some of the other hot-button issues. Children's lives and innocent lives are on the line here. Put down your petty nonsense, hyper-partisanship. Educate yourselves. Take a class on guns so that when you go and debate on the floor of the House and Senate, you don't sound like a complete idiot. And on the other side of the aisle, have some damn compassion. You say that you are all about pro-life, that you are all about the sanctity of life when it comes to an unborn fetus. But for political reasons, you cannot appear to even take one inch of a step back on the Second Amendment. It's not an infringement on the Second Amendment to find solutions to a mental health issue. There has to be a rigorous process before you step in and take someone's guns away. I am all for that. But to just say, well, nope, the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment and we can't, you know, there's nothing we can do. That's nonsense. There is something we all can do. My heart goes out to those families of the children that were killed and injured and wounded. Believe it or not, my heart goes out to the shooter, to his parents who are now charged. I feel for the prosecutor in her very difficult job right now. I believe some of that culpability falls upon the school administration and not just the parents. The hero here is the teacher that continued to do the right thing. And yet, despite her efforts, or his efforts, I don't know if it's a male or female teacher. I believe she said female. Despite their best efforts, the parents fought to have him go back to class. The administration caved, sent him back to class, and only minutes or hours later, he had followed through on the very thing that he had just written and drew on his paper, which was the reason that his parents were called in. Which is the reason that the school administration wanted him to go home and get into counseling or therapy or inpatient holding somewhere place so that he could get past this crisis that he was clearly in. I usually don't like to put this level of scrutiny on these situations because it's, you know, we always have the benefit of hindsight after these things. And so it's, you know, you judge people based on your perspective of what happened, but you don't know, you know, how clear or unclear things were before that happened. And I completely understand the propensity to think, you know, yeah, school shootings happen, but that, you know, it would never happen here. Or yeah, you know, struggling kids shoot their schools up all the time, but not my kid. We can't afford to think that way anymore. As sad as that is, and as important as it is to have our active shooting drills and to teach your child the best course of action if they find themselves in an active shooting situation, to have the police drill and drill and drill and know, you know, their response, those are all things that we need to do way more of, not less. But that's not the only answer. Because even despite how quick those police officers got there, the shooter still killed 4 people and injured 7 more. The cops were there and apprehended him within minutes. Administrators, parents, teachers, you can't allow yourself to think it can't happen to my child or my class or my school. We all know the red flags when we see them. See something, say something, do something. You have to. You have to. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. We were talking about the Oakland County school shooting, I believe in Oxford High School in Oakland County, Michigan. Very sad situation all the way around, but unprecedented in that the parents have been charged in this case with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. The suspect, the shooter, was charged with four counts of premeditated murder and a terrorism charge. And probably there's probably more charges coming federally, as in the straw purchase of that firearm that the father bought for his kid. He'll probably be charged federally in a firearms case or a firearms charge. But that's the least of his worries, the least of their worries. Anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Just a quick note right before I was to set to publish this episode, the news came out that the parents of Ethan Crumbly that were charged with four counts each of involuntary manslaughter for their actions contributing to the massacre are now considered fugitives of justice. Can't say that I'm surprised. I get them being scared, but you know, it's never the right decision to run from justice, run from the police. You know, you always have to turn yourself in. Now they've just made it so much more difficult on themselves. And I might add, a lot of my sympathy that I had for them has kind of dissipated a little bit in this decision to, if they really are fugitives, and that's not just a kind of a rush to judgment by the press or the prosecution or the police, if they really have taken steps to disappear, to go on the lam, then I got to say that's doesn't bode well for them in the court of public opinion. It won't bode well for them in the court of law, and it definitely doles down the sympathy that I had for them. I might do a part two on this this situation, similar to what I did in the Kyle Rittenhouse podcast episode. We'll just have to wait and see. I'll give it a couple days or a week and see what happens. But the plot thickens. They are now on the run. They're considered fugitives of justice. They are both charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter for their actions contributing to the massacre. I'm the other reason that I'm probably do another episode, a part two on this is that, you know, there may be another shoe to drop in terms of the school administration that definitely failed to stop this massacre. The teacher did everything she was supposed to do, and it seems like the administration did as well, up until the point that they failed to remove him from the school the morning of the shooting after all that happened and all that took place. Anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of the Come This Far podcast.